The state mental hospital was 20 miles east of Jackson on an interstate highway. I bluffed my way through the guardhouse, using the name of a doctor I'd located fishing around with the phone. Dr. Vero was very busy, and I read magazines for an hour outside his office. When I informed the girl at the desk that I was not leaving and that I would follow him home if necessary, he somehow found the time to squeeze me in. Vero had long hair and a grayish beard. His accent was clearly Upper Midwest. Two diplomas on his wall tracked him through Northwestern and Johns Hopkins, though in the dingy light of his debris-strewn office, I couldn't read the details. I told him what had happened that morning in Clanton. After my narrative, he said, "I can't talk about Mr. Hooten. As I explained on the phone, we have a doctor-patient privilege." Had, not have. It survives, Mr. Trainer. It's still alive, and I'm afraid I can't discuss this patient. I'd been around Harry Rex long enough to know that you never took no for an answer. I launched into a long and detailed account of the Paget case, from the trial to the parole, to the last month and the tension in Clanton. I told the story of seeing Hank Hooten late one Sunday night in the Calico Ridge Independent Church, and how no one seemed to know anything about him during the last years of his life. My angle was that the town needed to know what made him snap. How sick was he? Why was he released? There were many questions, and before we could put the tragic episode behind us, then we needed the truth. I caught myself pleading for information. "How much will you print?" he asked, breaking the ice. "I'll print what you tell me to print, and if something's off limits, just say so. Let's take a walk." On a concrete bench in a small shaded courtyard, we sipped coffee from paper cups. "This is what you can print," Vero began. "Mr. Hooten was admitted here in January 1971. He was diagnosed as schizophrenic, confined here, treated here, and released in October 1976. "Who diagnosed him?" I asked. "We now go off record, agreed?" "Agreed." "This must be confidential, Mr. Trainer. I must have your word on this." I put away my pen and notepad and said, "I swear on the Bible that this will not be printed." He hesitated for a long time, took several sips of his coffee, and for a moment I thought he might clam up and ask me to leave. Then he relaxed a little and said, "I treated Mr. Hooten initially. His family had a history of schizophrenia. His mother and possibly his grandmother suffered from it. Quite often genetics play a role in the disease. He was institutionalized while he was in college and remarkably managed to finish law school. After his second divorce, he moved to Clanton in the mid-60s, looking for a place to start over. Another divorce followed. He adored women, but could not survive in a relationship. He was quite enamored with Rhoda Casselaw and claimed he asked her to marry him repeatedly. I'm sure the young lady was somewhat wary of him. Her murder was very traumatic, and when the jury refused to send her killer to death, he, shall I say, slipped over the edge." "Thank you for using layman's terms," I said. "I remembered the diagnosis around town, slap-ass crazy." "He heard voices, the principal one being that of Miss Casselaw. Her two small children also talked to him. They begged him to protect her, to save her. They described the horror of watching their mother get raped and murdered in her own bed, and they blamed Mr. Hooten for not saving her. Her killer, Mr. Paget, also tormented him with taunts from prison. On many occasions, I watched by closed circuit as Mr. Hooten screamed at Danny Paget from his room here."
"Did he mention the jurors?"
"Oh, yes, all the time. He knew that three of them, Mr. Farguson, Mr. Teal, and Mrs. Root, had refused to bring back a death penalty. He would scream their names in the middle of the night."
"That's amazing."
"The jurors vowed to never discuss their deliberations. We didn't know how they voted until a month ago." "Well, he was the assistant prosecutor."
"Yes, he was. I vividly remembered Hank Hooten sitting beside Ernie Gaddis at the trial, never saying a word, looking bored and detached from the proceedings. Did he express a desire to seek revenge? A sip of coffee, another pause as he debated whether to answer. Yes, he hated them. He wanted them dead along with Mr. Paget. Then why was he released? I can't talk about his release, Mr. Traynor. I wasn't here at the time, and there might be some liability on the part of this institution.
You weren't here?
I left for 2 years to teach in Chicago. When I returned 18 months ago, Mr. Hooton was gone.
But you've reviewed his file?
Yes, and his condition improved dramatically while I was away. The doctors found the right mix of antipsychotic drugs, and his symptoms diminished substantially. He was released to a community treatment program in Tupelo, and from there he sort of fell off our radar. Needless to say, Mr. Traynor, the treatment of the mentally ill is not a priority in this state, nor in many others. We are grossly understaffed and underfunded.
Would you have released him?
I cannot answer that. At this point, Mr. Traynor, I think I've said enough.
I thanked him for his time, for his candor, and once again promised to protect his confidence. He asked for a copy of whatever I printed. I stopped at a fast food place in Jackson for a cheeseburger. At a payphone, I called the office, half wondering if I'd missed more shootings. Margaret was relieved to hear my voice.
You must come home, Willie, and quickly, she said.
Why?
Callie Ruffin has had a stroke. She's in the hospital.
Is it serious?
I'm afraid so.